Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and with me today, as we do each week, we have Pro Football Weekly NFL writer Eric Edholm and Pro Football Weekly managing editor Arthur Arkish. And guys, I hope you both are having a better day than J.R. Smith right now.
Eric, what do you think? That was a riveting game to watch until LeBron's teammates did, I guess, what LeBron's teammates have a rep for doing.
I think it just shows how incredible the guy is, not only playing five Warriors, but four Cleveland Cavaliers as well. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, thinking he was up a point. I mean, granted, maybe the shot gets blocked, but yeah, woof.
I didn't think I could be any more in awe of anything than LeBron's performance. I think he ended up with 51 points, one of the great individual NBA playoff efforts ever, in my opinion. But then I was just in awe of the incompetence. Not only, we can't give his other teammates a pass. Of course, it was Tristan Thompson with the ejection, and I believe it was, who's the point guard who missed the free throw that JR had the chance to rebound. You got to make your free throws in crunch time, and you probably don't want to get ejected in crunch time either.
Well, we'll save more of that chatter for our Pro Basketball Weekly podcast if we ever start that up. But we're here to talk NFL, guys, and glad to hear that you guys are doing well. Last week, we continued our division-by-division breakdowns in the AFC North, talking about the floors and ceilings of each team. This week, we're focusing on the AFC South. We'll also take a look at the AFC South win totals later in the show and get you our wagers. Guys, let's start with some headlines. I want to start out in New England. Is the Patriot way under attack? Former members of the organization have been critical of the culture in New England this week, and current players are saying playing for the Pats is not for everyone, but they love the team. Guys, while Belichick's approach to running an NFL team may not be for everyone, it appears his system has its shares of advocates. What's your take on this?
I think this story is kind of silly. I think we're putting too... Now, granted, there have been plenty of players who've left New England and said to themselves, yeah, that wasn't for me. I didn't like it there. I felt like I was a prisoner. I was this or that, or, you know, it was a joyless thing. But there are plenty of people who really have enjoyed their careers and have played long times for New England and obviously had a lot of success, too. And, you know, Cassius Marsh was thrown into this thing. He was traded, I think, like, you know, August 31st last year, whatever it was. It was right when rosters were being pared down. He gets tossed in. He hasn't been there. And all of a sudden, he's like, wow, this is night and day from what I had in Seattle. He didn't even make it to the end of November, I don't think, before they caught him. So he was there 3 months. And, I mean, I don't think his personal experience can ever reflect what every player or most players feel. I get what people are saying. Like, look, Belichick is a curmudgeon. He's got to have it his way, all that. I just think we're putting too much stock into a guy who was there for such a small sliver of time. And it's just because it's a sexy story, right? Because it's like, oh, everybody wants to see the Patriots fall. And I get that. But to me, it's just been overblown during a kind of a slow news cycle. That's my opinion. I'm sure other people feel the same. But Marsh pretty much came out and said later, well, you can't handle the truth, but that's how I feel. And that's the point. That's how he felt. Other guys can put up with that stuff. Other guys don't mind having a little discipline. So it's always going to be an individual thing, even if, you know, Belichick's a hardline guy.
Well, then, Eric, you've got, a couple Eagles, of course, who just beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, came out and wanted to be critical. Both Lane Johnson, I think, started, and then more recently, Brandon Brooks. And if you want to talk about a case-by-case basis, for Brandon Brooks to pretend like he knows the Patriot way because he played under Bill O'Brien in Houston – I mean, talk about a reach there. And I agree, this is much ado about nothing, but the timing of it obviously isn't coincidental. There's a more vulnerability in Foxborough right now, seemingly, than we've seen in a long time. And of course, the Eagles just, you know, they supplanted the Patriots, at least for now, as the team to beat. And I think people just kind of smell blood in the water and they want to kind of take advantage a little bit. But I'm pretty sure we just saw Josh McDaniels spurn a head coaching opportunity to go back to New England. So I know that's a coach and not a player, but clearly there are guys who really believe in the Patriot way too. And it takes not one but two hands to count the reasons or the rings, if you will, why the Patriot way clearly is still pretty effective at this juncture.
Yeah, it's not the happy hunting grounds, right? I mean, obviously, Brady's holding out for a reason. Gronk's got his reasons for staying away. Not holding out, but just not showing up for voluntary workouts. And, yeah, not everybody's going to be – you know, you can get worn down by this. Absolutely. There is a you know, no days off. That's their whole saying and everything like that. Well, you know, sometimes guys do need a little time away. I get it too. You know, the Lane Johnson stuff. I love Lane Johnson. He's eminently quotable. He's a fun guy. But for him to suggest like he has any inside knowledge about what goes on there is ridiculous. Same with Brooks, as you mentioned, a guy who played for the Texans, never once played for the Patriots or Belichick. I just think it's absurd that like, oh, we lump these three things together as if it's gospel. Everybody's experience can be different. I thought it was a Devin McCourty, I think, or somebody said, we've got some guys who were on the 0-16 Browns last year. You know, his brother, Danny Shelton, a couple others, I think, who've been with the Browns before, who are now Patriots. Ask them what fun is. You know, is fun being on a happy-go-lucky 0-16 team, or is it being on a team that has a chance to win the Super Bowl virtually every year? I mean, you can define happiness however you want. I just think it's kind of it's taken on a life of its own at this point.
Well said, guys. Well said. And Arthur said it best, too. I mean, their record shows how this Patriot way or being sort of this just making sure that everybody is doing what they need to do just really shows a winning culture. I don't think it's beyond that. Go ahead.
And look, Dan, credit to the Eagles. They managed to, you know, quote unquote, have fun and win the Super Bowl. Let's see if they can find the type of sustained success over a decade plus that New England has. Yeah. No one's done it to date. And again, that's not by accident either. It's the way that these players, what's been ingrained in them, and obviously having the best coach and the best quarterback, you know, doesn't hurt either.
The Seahawks were the most fun team 5 years ago. They were the team everybody wanted to emulate it, and they're great, but they're going through a transition now. Nobody has been able to kind of do what the Patriots have been able to sustain for so long. And again, it's however you define it. If you don't want to make the sacrifice, you don't want to be part of it, that's fine. That you're not beholden to that. You can go play for another team maybe. So, yeah, it's always going to be an individual perspective. And you can't argue with their level of success. And even if Belichick is, you know, a tough guy to like and a tough guy to play for, those are absolutely true things. But it's just how each player is going to define it.
Guys, next up in our headlines, the Wall Street Journal had a report on how Trump's pressure influenced the NFL to change its anthem rules. What do you say about this?
Guys, there's no news here. I mean, there's news in that the Wall Street Journal has actual quotes from Jerry Jones from his deposition in the Colin Kaepernick collusion case. This is very winning, strong issue for me, Jerry Jones said, of what Trump told him in a phone conversation. Stephen Ross came out after the fact to say he was originally in favor of the protesting players, but Trump's sort of rhetoric on this has changed his tune. So, Eric, again, you know, we had an editorial at PFW last week clearly stating that the owners kind of bowed to the political pressure here. There's no surprise, but good on the Wall Street Journal of actually getting this scoop. And there's still something about seeing quotes from these owners, you know, alluding to this that makes it resonate, I guess, even a little bit more.
Yeah, and, you know, it wasn't an owner, but it was a team president, Mark Murphy, for the Packers, who had an interesting quote. I think he said something in effect of, when they were asked, you know, did Trump come up in their conversations and their discussion? I think this was a Sports Illustrated report. I'm not sure. But they said it was more about how they were projecting the president might react, anticipating what tweets would come out, you know, how the fans would react, how the media react. Sure. But it was, to you know, the way it read, I don't have it in front of me, it was more about what will the president do? So, you know, whatever you want to say about Donald Trump, he's at least got the NFL in the palm of their hands now. I mean, he's already played them. You know, he's already manipulated them to change their anthem stance in a way that they thought he might find favorable. So, you know, it is what it is. And people are split on this. I you know, I've looked at three or four different polls on this. I'm trying to be as objective as I can and just present people the information. Some people like the imposition. Some people don't. It seems to be almost down the middle. The players aren't happy. The media doesn't seem very happy about it. That's still an issue for the NFL that hasn't gone away. That's kind of the bottom line, I think.
Great points by Eric. All I would add, I know that Eric and Hub hit on this last week. We've hit on it plenty at the site, but I wasn't on the podcast last week. So all I would add to this is that the issue was going away, and it's the NFL's fault in this and kind of bringing it back up and ensuring that it's probably going to be the leading headline, the number one news story when week one rolls around. Instead of some other great lines, great injured players returning, you know, the Eagles trying to defend their Super Bowl title. No, we're going to be talking about which players protest, which players are in the tunnel. And it's just unfortunate that it had to come up again when it seemed like it was quieting on its own.
And to me, just one quick point on this. I think that the owners are going to end up in a strange way looking rosier because of that, because it's going to be more of the focus on which players are breaking ranks. You know, I doubt, I don't know, who knows. Will a whole team be in the locker room? Maybe, maybe not. But we're going to end up making it about, even if it's painted in a positive light by, mostly progressive media, liberal media, whatever you want to say, they're going to say, here are the three guys on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Seattle Seahawks, Philadelphia Eagles, whatever team, who chose to remain in the locker room. And then they become the focus. Again, it's taking the focus away from what the intention was initially. And it's putting it more on, here are the guys who are stepping out. So I think, in a way, what the owners did was actually kind of brilliant, even if I disagree with the way they presented it, because it's going to make those guys in the spotlight and less about what, you know, sort of the original intent of this thing was.
Yeah, brilliant is one word. Cowardly is another.
You know what I mean? Yeah, for sure.
I do. The bottom line is, I kind of threw the players under the bus a little bit here, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised in seeing the way that the NFL acts on so many other issues. So, but I do understand, and again, this issue isn't going away either on our website or really anywhere that you go to consume football. So stay tuned for better or worse.
Well, let's wrap up headlines with a much better story, a more feel-good story here. Packers running back Aaron Jones and Cardinals tight end Jermaine Gresham are just two examples of the good in NFL players, and both performed simple gestures while at the airport that meant little to them, but much to the people who benefited from it. Jones helping a woman in a wheelchair at the airport, and Gresham helping a stranded passenger make her flight. And guys, in a world filled with a lot of bad news these days, it's good to hear some good.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's cool. You know, Jermaine Gresham, you know, sort of coming to the rescue for, I think it was it a journalist? I'm not sure. It doesn't matter, but it was a student or something like that. But yeah, coming to the rescue and stepping up and being able to help her pay for her luggage fee. That's kind of a cool story. And it's a small gesture. I think it was only $50, but it has big resonance. And there are a lot of NFL players who do some great work, and they should be recognized for this stuff. And, you know, does it tie into the anthem stuff, you know, tangentially? Yeah, a little, of course, right? We're talking about the impact on society that these guys can make. And so, you know, to me, these are the stories that I'd rather hear about than anthem protests or you know, Trump or the owners or any of that stuff. This is the stuff that I think people want to see and know that they're thinking about helping out the people who need help.
Yeah, Eric nailed it. You know, there are probably bad dudes in every locker room in the NFL, the NBA, the Major League, NHL. That's just kind of the nature of the beast. But there are a lot more good ones. There are a lot more great stories like this that don't get told enough. And just thought it was worth taking a minute. Aaron Jones, the Packers running back, helping an elderly woman in a wheelchair in Appleton, Wisconsin airport, looked like she was kind of stranded. They're little gestures. They're gestures that you and I, and we'd like to think all of us, are making every day. But again, it doesn't seem like the light gets shined on these athletes as much as it does when they're protesting the anthem or getting arrested in some instances for some knucklehead stuff off the field.
What's awesome, too, is that some of these guys, and you guys will know this as well, just kind of being in these locker rooms, is that, you know, you have some guys with egos and guys that, you know, are just kind of feel above everybody else. And to see this, and I think both Jones and Gresham, neither one of them were looking for any kind of recognition for this. They were just doing a good deed and being at the right place at the right time. And I can't imagine how good it must have felt to the people they helped to just have this happen.
Yeah, I know of a player who's sort of always asked me, hey, I don't want to be known for this. Like, basically, he doesn't want the publicity of being as helpful and philanthropic as he is, but you know, he's been in the league 6-7 years now, something like that, and you know, kind of shies away from the attention. I think there are a lot of guys like that who just say, you know, they do events at hospitals and talk to kids. They do stuff that where cameras and media aren't invited to, and those gestures are genuine and legitimate, and they're not just publicity stunts. So I think in the case of both Gresham and Jones, obviously we get to spotlight them a little bit, and they may have been a little sheepish about it, but you know, they were happy to do their little part, and that's all we should, you know, sort of celebrate, I think.
All right, fellas. Well, as we said at the top of the show, we are continuing our division-by-division breakdowns and talking about some of the potential for each team and where they might need improvements. And, of course, this week we're taking a look at the AFC South. Let's start with the Jacksonville Jaguars, guys. Let's talk first just about sort of this offseason. I mean, do you feel that this offseason has impressed as much as their 2017 breakthrough?
I don't. I'm curious to get Eric and your thoughts on this, Dan. And I couldn't have more appreciation for the Jaguars roster. They are young, they are loaded, and they appear to be built for sustained success. But just little things that I don't understand, like letting Allen Robinson escape. I know Eric's going to agree on this one because we wrote an AFC South roundtable. We all participated in a roundtable, all the PFW editors, and we had a one category, biggest offseason defection, and Eric wasn't alone in listing Allen Robinson at the end of that list, and I thought he nailed it. It seemed like just a risk maybe not worth taking. He could turn into a great value now with the Bears, of course, but the Jaguars elected to overpay one of their own dudes in Marquise Lee, and then really overpay another division rival in Dante Moncrief and hoping that they're going to replace Allen Robinson. So, yeah, they still got young guys like Keelan Cole and Dede Westbrook. There is some excitement there. But for a team that's on the precipice potentially of winning a Super Bowl, a homegrown guy like Allen Robinson, I think you'd want to re-sign. Mercedes Lewis is another example. Our Austin Seferian-Jenkins and Niles Paul, is that going to be a net gain over your longest tenured player in Mercedes Lewis? Yes, he's old. No, he's not exciting, but pretty dependable. And I don't think that's a word you'd use to describe either of those other two tight ends, Eric.
Yeah, I just taking a big look at their offseason, pretty good overall. I mean, their draft, I love their first three picks. And, you know, I love the big picture of what they had. They didn't need to. They could just draft for talent because they had pretty much 21 of their starters locked in. They knew who they're, you know, they had Andrew Noel. It's a great spot. You know, that's a great thing for them. But, you know, at the cost of losing a young potential star wide receiver with the hope that Lee becomes more than he is, with the hope that Moncrief fulfills his potential, with the hope that the tight end position is going to be more fruitful. It's a lot of hope. You know, that's a lot of, especially with Blake Bortles now under fire. He had the extension this offseason. You know, they kind of pushed him down the road 1 year. They only drafted Tanner Lee in round 6 or 7. He supposedly hasn't looked very good so far in OTAs, very, very early. They trade for Cody Kessler. These are just fallback options. They're not, you know, future starters. So, you know, you want to help your quarterback out. You're on the verge. You were close to going to a Super Bowl last year. You add all the playmakers you can get. And I would consider Robinson an addition because he didn't play last year. He played 3 snaps or whatever. So, unless they just had some feeling that, A, he wasn't worth the price, B, his knee wasn't going to be in good a shape as they thought it was, or C, that somehow this collective approach was better. I didn't get that move very much.
And this will be an interesting, Eric. We'll be able to kind of tie this move to another one, the Bears letting Cam Meredith go, because Allen Robinson arrives in Chicago. They take a risk on him. And I know this isn't the NFC North offseason review, but the Bears take a risk in letting Cam Meredith go. He lands with New Orleans. So I kind of wonder if we'll connect those two moves later on down the road and certainly draw parallels between them. And I would just echo what Eric said. I like their draft a lot. I mean, DJ Shark in round 2 has a chance to be a home run pick. Ronnie Harrison, awesome value on the hard-hitting Alabama safety on day 2. Taven Bryan was a value pick. So I agree, they did well there. And we should acknowledge that when you've got guys like Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey who are going to be up soon for new deals, you have to make these tough choices. But that's always the football nerd in me. That always interests me as a front office goes from identifying and procuring talent to trying to retain it. There's two parts to the puzzle, and you have to kind of look at those both in trying to build a consistent winner.
I agree.
And you guys had mentioned Blake Bortles. I mean, can he get over that hump in the playoffs this season?
We'll see. You know, obviously, you know, they feel like the run game is going to be a big factor. They've been kind of hinting that Corey, you know, Grant is going to be a piece that they're going to use. And, you know, he's got more receivers to throw to. He's got a great, you know, potentially great offensive line now. So if he doesn't, there's no evidence to think he will at any point. So this is really the year. He does it this year or he doesn't. And at that point, they have to decide, okay, let's figure out what our quarterback plans are after that, because their future quarterback, to me, is not on the roster right now.
And it's pretty clear, Eric, that they are still very lukewarm on that happening. If you look at the fine print, if you will, in the extension, he wasn't getting paid like a dude who they're viewing as their future. He's a guy who got paid on still a prove it deal. And we'll see. I mean, he has some momentum going. He showed me a ton in the playoffs. I thought he was tough as hell and standing in there against Brady and Roethlisberger. But is he ever going to be the consistent down-to-down force that team's going to want, especially with the championship-caliber defense? I don't know. Again, we'll wait and see. I think we should have a better idea after this season for sure.
Yeah.
Arthur, what would you say might prevent this defense from maintaining any kind of dominance?
Probably not, probably nothing, because they're just so absolutely loaded. But the two things I think I highlight in my little notes are the loss of Aaron Colvin, I think, is an underrated one. I guess, again, it goes back to the Jaguars know Jalen Ramsey is going to be the highest paid corner in the NFL sooner than later. And they already just paid AJ Boye, who's already, I think, a top five earner at the position. So you've got to pick and choose. The opportunity cost of that was losing a really good slot player in Aaron Colvin. He's in Houston now, so they'll see him twice a year. But there's little doubt in my mind that teams are going to be looking to attack the Jaguars over the middle even more now to avoid those two dudes on the outside. And I'm just not a DJ Hayden believer at all. So that concerns me. And then just overall, they're still very young. There were still bouts of immaturity last year, Eric. So I'm curious to see. And Doug Marrone's a hard-nosed coach, a no-nonsense guy. Obviously, Tom Coughlin the same way. Are they going to get through to their players consistently about avoiding reading the clippings and ensuring that they're not kind of too fond of what they accomplished last year and are going to rest on their laurels entering this season?
Yeah, two things for me. Paul Posluszny, you know, just as you can't replace what he gave them. And you think think back to what Telvin Smith said as far as, you know, just his camaraderie with him and the leadership that he had on the field. Was he the same player he was, you know, 5 years ago? No, but that's a loss. Their depth at linebacker is very thin. If Miles Jack, who's got an injury history, goes down, that's a blow. Telvin Smith, undersized guy, he goes down, that's a blow. So those are worries. They're probably not going to score seven defensive touchdowns again either. And that was, you know, that made up a big chunk of their scoring last year. I mean, they, you know, 42 or three touchdowns, whatever it was, that was 20% of their touchdown total came by defense. And if you want to throw in special teams, they had another one. So that's going to be tough to live up to that standard again.
Let's talk a little Tennessee Titans next. Mariota and Matt LaFleur, a marriage made in heaven, guys. What do you think there?
Could be, Arthur. I mean, you look at what LaFleur has done in really a couple of years now, and he's done good work in Washington. He's done good work in his 1 year in L.A. helping Jared Goff. It's hard to know exactly. Is it the Sean McVay experience? Is it LaFleur doing something here? Why didn't he just stick around in L.A. with the same title? You know, just a couple fewer responsibilities. But this is the opportunity where if he turns Mariota around from a poor regular season, he was, you know, more interceptions than touchdowns. That's three different clubs in three different years. He's had a positive, tangible effect. I think he's a head coach. You know, I think he's going to get that opportunity. So, obviously, this year for Mike Vrabel, first year head coach, he wants to see an innovative offense that can kind of get all the different pieces, Corey Davis and such, and, you know, some of these young pass catchers involved, and really take advantage of all Mariota's gifts.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Innovation, a great word, and flexibility, another key one. That's the reason Mike Mularkey isn't the Titans head coach anymore. He was too rigid. He wasn't willing to try and play to Mariota's strengths. I have little doubt that Matt LaFleur is going to do that. I think the other name we should add in here, the quarterback's coach, Pat O'Hara, who worked with Deshaun Watson last year. I know Bill O'Brien didn't like losing in Houston, so he's under LaFleur now on that staff too, and will also be a big guy here, but the Titans have plenty of talent. It has not been maximized. Obviously, we watched the whole DeMarco Murray you know, Derrick Henry on even timeshare for too long, and really excited to see LaFleur come in with just some fresh ideas and guys like, you know, Deion Lewis and as you mentioned, Corey Davis, and such a dynamic quarterback in Marcus Mariota, who just needs to stay healthy, A, and then B, just get into that comfort zone and get back to what he was doing in years one and two.
Guys, let's talk a little bit about Mike Vrabel. Is he ready to be a coach? Eric, I'll start with you.
We'll see. The feeling I got talking to some people in Houston is that they weren't exactly boo-hooing the fact that he was leaving. And that doesn't mean that just because you don't have success as a defensive coordinator that you can't be a good head coach. And I remember talking to Vrabel when he was in his playing days, actually the 2007 season, and thinking, this could be a head coach one day. I mean, you get that feeling when you talk to players, which guys might make good head coaches and such, but he's really got a small sample size, right? A couple years at Ohio State, a couple years at Houston. I don't want to compare it to the Mike Singletary, because that's a stretch a little bit, but that's almost what it feels like a little bit, where didn't have a lot to go on. And yeah, I guess you could say the same for Sean McVay or any other head coach who's doesn't have a long coaching tenure, that sort of thing. Matt Nagy this year in Chicago, whoever. But I feel like it's a little different. And so he's got to prove himself. And this is a team that is talented. It's a good roster. They've got a franchise quarterback in place, some other pieces that are good to go. Defense is brewing, and ultimately that unit's probably going to be on his watch a little more than offense. But yeah, just I'm in prove it mode a little bit with him.
I'm the same way, Eric. I'm certainly not going to hang Mike Vrabel for having the worst scoring defense in football last year when you lose, obviously, J.J. Watt, Whitney Merciless, sure, all the things that happen on that defense. And there are fast risers who have early success. You know, Mike Tomlin obviously immediately comes to mind. But I guess what separates this from a Sean McVay type situation, McVay had Wade Phillips and you had John Fossil around him. You got some other young guys. Yes, Dean Pease comes to help with the defense, but Matt LaFleur, first time doing this. Craig Aukerman on special teams is kind of new to this. So I like to see, I typically like to see that these rookie head coaches surround themselves with a ton of experience on their staff. I don't know if I necessarily see that with Mike Vrabel's crew here. So really anxious to see what happens. But yeah, I've heard some of the same things about his job in Houston. Maybe even possibly addition by subtraction as they go back to Romeo Crennel there. So, yeah, very anxious to see how this dynamic unfolds.
And, guys, let's wrap with the pass catchers and defensive backs. Are these guys ready to ball? Arthur, we'll start with you.
We'll see. I mean, you know, they've put a lot of resources. John Robinson has in the position now, obviously. Corey Davis, fifth overall pick last year. Dory Jackson, the other first rounder. And then he circles back and spends on Malcolm Butler to kind of complete that defensive backfield this year. But they weren't very good, Eric, playing pass defense last year with the Dory and some other, you know, they had Kevin Byard, who played great, of course, but the other newcomers there and Jonathan Cyprian. And I'm drawing a blank on the other corner who was getting roasted, but they've got a lot to prove, in my opinion, too. They were very strong versus the run last year and very vulnerable versus the pass, and anxious to see as well how Malcolm Butler kind of turns over this new leaf and kind of Foxborough Midwest, if you will.
Yeah, with Logan Ryan there and everybody. And I mean, I think they have a pretty good secondary. What I want to see is the pass rush improve, because that'll help that secondary. And, you know, to me, Derek Morgan, final year of his deal, Brian Arakpo, final year of his deal. That's why they went up and got Harold Landry in round two. You know, Rashawn Evans can blitz. He played on the edge sometime as well. I know that's not going to be his primary role, but those two guys have to help out, and they've got to get something from Benny Logan inside. They've got to have a great year again from Jarrell Casey and those guys up front. So, yeah, I just worry a little bit if those guys are asked to cover for 3 and 4 seconds on a lot of plays, how they're going to handle it. So that's probably the biggest issue for me.
Okay, guys. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll head to Houston and discuss Watson and the Texans, and we'll wrap things up around the AFC South in Indianapolis as Andrew Luck looks to return to form. We'll have that and more coming up. Welcome back, everyone. We are continuing our division-by-division breakdowns and talking about some of the potential for each team and where they might need improvements, focusing this week on the AFC South alongside Arthur Arkish and Eric Edholm. I'm Dan Mott. And guys, we're going to move now to the Houston Texans. Can Watson juggle rehab and evolving in the offseason when his foes used his limited rookie tape to adjust?
That's the ultimate question. If anyone can do it, I would say it is Deshaun Watson. He has shown before at Clemson how he can overcome a serious knee injury and be better for it. No worse for the wear, certainly. And I suspect he'll be able to do it again. But I think the second part of that, Eric, is the key. No one will argue that Deshaun Watson took the league by storm last year, and he did it against some of the stalwart, you know, football minds in Bill Belichick and obviously Pete Carroll in back-to-back weeks there. But now there's been a full offseason to watch what they did. And for that reason, Bill O'Brien has said he's going to kind of recalibrate his offense again this offseason, despite how just powerful it was under the control of Watson last year. So it's kind of a chess match here that's about to unfold. And I don't know. How do you see it? How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, you saw some thrilling football from him last year. I think he's got the moxie, the athleticism, and the quarterbacking ability to be great in this league. And yet he's also got internal things working against him, too. They're rebuilding this offensive line. You know, they brought in a bunch of guys who they're going to try to hopefully fit, you know, into all these different spaces and say, all right, here's our left tackle, here's our left guard, here's our center, and make it all work. You know, they probably have five starting caliber linemen, but is Julian Davenport going to play left tackle? You know, they draft this kid Martinez Rankin in round three. Does he fit in as a starter? Is Nick Martin going to come back? You know, Senio Calamete is a great reserve in New Orleans last year, but is he a jack of all trades, master of none, best as a sixth man, or is he a starter? You know, that sort of stuff. So the offensive line, the identity of the run game, you know, who's going to take that lead role? Lamar Miller, Dante Foreman. Can they get a healthy season out of Will Fuller? Is Braxton Miller going to add anything? Right now they have one sure thing, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. So I still, even with the explosiveness we saw, you know, the Seattle game, the New England game, the Titans game was unbelievable. The second half of the Chiefs game, it's great tape. That's great snapshot of what he can achieve. But it's not going to all be like that if the pieces around him aren't functional.
Yeah, great points there. The O-line in particular, I'm curious about. It was really bad last year, and I think that some of these new guys, like you said, maybe there's some starter caliber dudes. Maybe some of them aren't. I mean, Cyantrell Henderson looks like the currently plugged in on the right side as the starter at right tackle. And you know, Jeff Allen has to have a huge bounce back after he struggled in leaving Kansas City and getting paid in Houston. So he's going to need help there to be sure. And then I think to myself, well, again, the unit was bad last year and Watson was transcendent. So maybe he's going to be one of those dudes who just elevates his teammates consistently. But again, you're putting all these things together. It's the trying to recover from the ACL. It's the defenses have a lot more on him now. So there's no question that it's going to be more of kind of an uphill climb this year. But I'm not betting against Deshaun Watson. He seems special to me, and I think he's going to continue to be that way.
Let's talk a moment about defense, guys. What are the reasonable expectations for Watt and that 32nd ranked D that also gets Merciless back?
I think player of the year, right? Yeah, I mean, it's guaranteed that JJ will be back. And no, it's hard to know. I mean, I love it. I think it would be fantastic if he had a second act and was even remotely close to as dominant as he was, you know, in his 20s, as he sort of comes up on his 30th birthday here. I think he turns 30 at the end of the season or close to it. So it's hard to know. I mean, guys his size don't typically come back from the types of injuries he had the last 2 years combined. Merciless, I feel like, has a good chance to come back and be great. We know what Jadeveon Clowney did last year. He was fantastic. He was kind of a one-man show. I think Tyrann Mathieu adds something special to the secondary. You know, I thought Justin Reed in round three was a really good pick. So there's reason for hope. DJ Reader's a pretty good player up front. I like their linebackers overall. You know, Zach Cunningham, they drafted in round two last year. Bernard McKinney does his job pretty well. So there's the pieces of what could be a very good defense. And I think the simplicity of going back to Cornell, he's not going to do some of the stuff that Vrabel tried to do last year and unsuccessfully. So, yeah, I think it has a chance to be a top 10, top 12 defense. I don't know if it's we're talking about one of the elite units, and I think that applies to Watt, Merciless, all the guys coming back from injury.
Yeah, I think to expect at this point that we're going to see a three-time defensive MVP once again out of J.J. Watt. Again, another dude you probably don't want to go betting against, but realistically, history tells us, you know, likely not going to be the case. But what I like about this makeup is that if you think about it, we haven't really seen a healthy Watt and Jadeveon Clowney side by side for any sustained amount of time, because they've been in and out of the lineup. So Clowney was all that and more last year. He's going to be, I think, paid like one of the highest paid defenders in the NFL at some point this offseason. He earned it. So I think that if you have Clowney, who's right and firing on all cylinders, it takes some of the pressure off of J.J. Watt, which I love. And then I really do like the additions in the secondary, because that was the real sore spot last season. Jonathan Joseph is not what he used to be, obviously. But I like Aaron Colden. We talked about him a little bit with the Jaguars. I think he's going to make for a really good addition. And I really like Tyrann Mathieu, too, on a one-year deal. I think he's going to be motivated. Now he's 2 years removed from the knee injury. He led all the NFL in defensive snaps last year. So the mileage, I don't think, should be a big concern if you can keep him on the field, of course. And I just like the mix of how that kind of new look secondary is going to appear this year.
Well, guys, we wrap things up in the AFC South in Indianapolis with the Indianapolis Colts. And Peyton Manning had an interview with ESPN saying that Luck needs reps to return to form. But is he returning to a better roster? Guys, what do you think?
Yeah, I need a winning lotto ticket to get rich, too. So I'll just throw that out there. But and Peyton Manning is obviously notorious for taking every single practice rep throughout his career. So to hear him say that couldn't be less surprising, but it really couldn't be more true. Remember, you know, Frank Reich coming in, there's a new offense to install. Andrew Luck has a lot of lost time to try and make up for. As far as the roster being ready better, yeah, I think it is, and especially along the offensive line. So maybe, Eric, that's where the kind of reasons for encouragement start. But they don't start until we have a better sense that we're going to actually see Andrew Luck playing football at some point again in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, right? I mean, he's supposedly made all these positive strides. He's doing well. The club's feeling good about his progress, and yet he hasn't thrown a football yet. I don't know if that's, you know, entirely by design, or if that's them just being very, very, very cautious and erring on that side of things. So I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, they made some upgrades. The depth is certainly better. You got a day one starter in Quentin Nelson. You got a couple receivers in there who at least are going to help. But, you know, he's still entering kind of a precarious situation offensively, and that's assuming he's full health. So I still have so many questions. I like the direction, but this is a slow burn for this Colts team. They have work to do.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate for them, Eric, that as they've been in sort of limbo with Andrew Luck's health, the rest of the division has made really great strides seemingly in a short amount of time. So whether that has widened the gap, we'll have to wait and see. But it's really hard to project the Colts until we have more clarity on Luck. But let me just ask you quickly to wrap up the Colts discussion. What do you think about Chris Ballard's contingency plans? I feel like the Colts have taken a lot of heat for not having a better situation behind Luck. Are you a Jacoby Brissett guy? Did he make you a believer at all in what he did in a tough situation last year?
I thought he played pretty well, all things considered. Is he ever going to be a great starter in this league? Probably not. But you know what? That's better than a lot of teams have as their number two. So, you know, I get it. It was kind of a lucky trade that fell into their laps a little bit. They should have addressed it earlier. They should have had a plan B sooner. But all things considered, for him to come in the way he did, you know, they were not planning on him playing second half of week one. Guess what? He played as well as you probably could have hoped. Took too many sacks, you know, wasn't a downfield passer, but did some good things nonetheless.
And then defensively, for me, I guess the key is going to be a quartet of second-round picks, three from April, and Darius Leonard, Kimoko Ture, and Tyquan Lewis, all expected to play early roles, I would think, for sure, when you look at the positions and what's around them. And then, of course, Quincy Wilson, last year's number two, spent most of his rookie season in Chuck Pagano's doghouse. Can he kind of come out of it and turn into kind of the number one corner that he sort of profiled in coming out of Florida?
Yeah, he had a disappointing year. He wasn't in shape. He was prepared. He wasn't ready to go. That's why you saw him limited in terms of his play. And yeah, those three second rounders you mentioned, I liked all three to a degree. I would probably order them Leonard, Touray, and then Lewis in that order. But I had them as like third, fourth, fifth round picks. I thought they were all reaches. Now, if they all turn out to be the best possible player they can be, those are pretty good values. I'll be fine with that. If they're all three contributors, great. They're shifting fronts. They're going to play a totally different style of defense. A couple of these veterans they brought back, John Simon and whoever else, may not have spots on this team. It's still a big work in progress on that side of the ball. The front seven is okay. The secondary has potential, but I still think this is a bottom third of the NFL defense until proven otherwise.
Yep, that makes two of us. I'm excited to see Darius Leonard in particular in this new defense that puts so much premium on speed. But yeah, there's still a lot of holes here. And I do like the former Raider addition, of course, in Dinico Autry. He's going to be, I think, a good player for them. But this doesn't happen overnight, and I think there's a long way to go, Dan.
I agree.
Arthur, you had mentioned at the beginning of the Colts talk about Reich. Is the awkwardness gone with the Colts settling on a plan F in Frank Reich?
That was a rhetorical question. I have no idea. But Frank Reich, I think, is deserving this opportunity. And I think when we look elsewhere, we were talking about, you know, with the Titans and someone like Matt LaFleur, how much sort of clout should he get and how much of it was Sean McVay. A lot of people will say the same thing with Reich learning under Doug Peterson. But let's not forget, Reich has called plays before. He did it with the Chargers. He did it a little bit in Philly, I believe. So he's done this before. And I still go back to his introductory press conference and that awesome line, the backup role, and I'm paraphrasing, the backup role has suited me pretty well in my career. Of course, he was one of the great backup quarterbacks in the league for, I think, more than 10 years, largely with the Bills. So I loved him bringing a little humor into an awkward situation. And the question is, can kind of Chris Ballard warm up to him? Because I still wonder, Eric, how he wasn't on that initial list, how things kind of turn around so much. It'll be an interesting situation to monitor.
Yeah, there's no question. And Ballard's made some missteps. He's made some moves that have been, you know, a little bit questionable at times, but still hopeful for the long-term vision. You just want to be able to get some of this to kind of flourish while you assume Andrew Luck is at least in his prime. Again, we don't even know what his health status is right now, so this is all speculative.
Yep.
Before we leave the AFC South in the dust for today's show, guys, let's talk a moment about the AFC South win totals and get some over-unders going. And let's start with the Texans, who are looking at an 8.5. What are your thoughts there?
Bill O'Brien was 9-7, I want to say, in three straight years with a motley crew of quarterbacks. So, I think when you look at what he has coming back, Eric, and you look at the stability they think they've finally found under center, I'm really high on the Texans, and I'm definitely going over on that one.
Yeah, I think so, too. I picked them to win the division reluctantly because I know how good, you know, the Jaguars were last year, how good they can be. But, I think it'll come down to these two teams, and so you're expecting one of them to be in that 10, 11, 12 win range, whoever wins the division. So even the second-place team, I think, could do pretty well for themselves and get in double digits. So I go over on this one.
You got the Colts at 6.5. What's your over-unders on that?
I think I'm going under, Arthur. I with so many questions right now. I mean, if everything works out, could they be an 8-8 team or something? Yeah, for sure. But I just feel like at this point, I've got a real 5-11 vibe until we know Luck's health and we know how these pieces are all going to fit together.
Yeah, I think the 6.5 really kind of that number seems high to begin with. I know they were in a lot of close games last year and had a lot of fourth quarter meltdowns. But for kind of the reasons we alluded to a couple minutes ago, until there's more clarity, I'm not a gambler to begin with. But I can't see myself putting money on such a clouded situation.
The Jags actually have the highest on in the AFC South at 9. What's your over under on that?
It's a tough one, Arthur, because, you know, part of me thinks, boy, it's almost foolish to bet the under. This is one I would softly bet the over. I wouldn't necessarily feel great about it because I wouldn't be shocked. You know, the Jaguars are a good football team last year. Were they a little chaotic at times? Did they rely on that defense scoring some points and creating opportunities for them? Yes, and they'll get some of that again. But I would say a very soft recommendation for an over here.
I'm gonna cheat and make the listeners go to ProFootballWeekly.com to read the AFC South roundtable. I'm not gonna give the specific stat, but Eric has a great one in there about the Jaguars and what he just sort of hinted at. All of the help they got from the defense in terms of scoring. I don't think you can count on that year to year, but again, I can't ignore the talent either. So I'm going very slightly over as well on this one, but I would tread lightly on that.
We have the Titans at 8. What's your over under there?
I'm embarrassed to admit, Eric, that I don't know what happens in these instances. I assume you just get your money back, but I think the Titans could very well be 8-8. So if they push, I assume that there's just no win, no loss. You end where you started, correct?
You lose the juice, right? Yeah, you lose a small percentage, right? The house has to get theirs, but yeah, it's basically a push. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of about where I've got them this year. I feel like, you know, if they did as well as they did last year without Mariota playing at full potential, could I see a scenario where they somehow get to, 11-5 like the Panthers did or something last year? Yeah. Could they be the Carolina Panthers of 2017 this year? Perhaps. But I also could see first-year head coach, new coordinator, a defense that I don't think is fully realized yet, some other things that I'm kind of not as high on as other people are. Yeah, I would probably, if I had to pick, go over and say they might get to 9 wins, but that, I'm not going too much higher than that.
I think the Titans and the Bears, and there are a lot of people are going to draw these parallels because you got the quarterbacks getting rescued by these new innovative play callers and leaving these archaic systems. I think the Titans and the Bears both are going to show important improvement, especially on offense, but I'm not sure it's going to be reflective on the scoreboard or on the win-loss record in really good divisions.
Yep, I agree.
Arthur, you had mentioned for our listeners to go to ProFootballWeekly.com. If you're going there for that roundtable, you might want to check out our gambling guide at ProFootballWeekly.com as well. We'll have all 32 teams there and their win totals and some breakdowns of that, so be sure to check that out once again at ProFootballWeekly.com. We have a few more minutes left here on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, and earlier this week over in the NBA, the 76ers launched an investigation into claims that Brian Colangelo had a fake Twitter, also known as burner accounts. According to the report, he had 5 of them, and they were terrible. This led us to have some fun and kind of come up with some hypothetical NFL GM burner accounts. Arthur, I know you had a bunch of them. Let's start. You had some great ones. Let's start with you.
Well, not that many of them are G-rated is the problem, so I think a few of them are going to get left on the cutting room floor of our private Slack account. But and I'll decide whether we're going to find a way to put some of these on the website, so maybe keep an eye out for them there. But just a couple I did like. Let me see here. Mike Brown, of course, runs the Bengals. I've got 2 for him. At Character Matters or Marvin's a Hell of a Drug. I think those are both Bengals fans should get a kick out of both of those. I've got Howie Roseman here as at Better Than Chip. I think that one he has certainly proven. If we want to get a little edgier for Bob McNair, the Texans owner, I have World's Best Warden. I don't know if that's going to go over well. His, of course, inmates running the asylum comment at some meetings earlier this year. Actually, that was last year. And then just one more silly one here. David Gettleman, the Giants' new general manager. I went with 0 RB strategy because, of course, Saquon Barkley, the 2nd overall pick this year. Christian McCaffrey, Eric, 8th overall last season.
Yeah, I had loves me RBs 1 for Gettleman, or switching it up slightly, Mog Holly instead of Hog Molly. You know, of course, he loves his offensive lineman. 1951, the year he was born. So I got to have – and every GM, I think, has one, or at least has somebody sort of monitoring these tweets. It's the idea that you might use them to message people about team strategy. That may be the bad thing, right? So I can't imagine somebody like Bill Belichick – being on there because he always talks about how much of a Luddite he is and how, sort of how anti-technology. He likes to use the my face, snap face. That's his kind of go-to thing. So that would be my burner account for him. And Jason Light, remember when Bucks were winning games, he used to go jumping in pools. So he'd be pool jumper 1, 2, 3, 4 for me.
Love it. Mine weren't as good, but I gave a shot at it. I got Chris Ballard's at Where's My Luck 2018. Nice. I got Ryan Pace. Hey, it's the Bears. If you ever listen to Pace talk, he does a lot of haze. Hey, listen to it. Yeah.
Hey.
Or fired up, Ryan Pace. I'm fired up about the season.
And then I got John Dorsey, the Browns, at Let's Win One 2018. So
I like that.
All right, guys. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. We want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. Also, head over to ProFootballWeekly.com for the best NFL news 24/7. Next week, we'll be looking at the AFC West in our division breakdown, so be sure to watch for that. Big thanks to Umphreys McGee. We don't thank them enough. Big thanks to Umphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Out of Order. You can find them on iTunes as well, so go check them out. We want to thank you once again, all of you, for listening. And for Eric at Home and Arthur Arkish, I'm Dan Mott. We will talk to you next week, everyone. Take care.
Yeah.